our website, kgmu.org. While you're there, you can link to our 24-hour music stream, afterfm.com, and to our dedicated news website, news.kgmu.org. A little bit cooler in the forecast for today. Expect highs in the low 50s under mostly sunny skies, warming up again on Thursday. That high getting up close to 70 degrees, but cooling off again on Friday with a chance of rain coming in along the Front Range. And that rain could turn to snow Friday night. But sunny skies in the forecast for Saturday and Sunday, albeit with cooler temperatures. Coming up in just a moment, Josh Chetwynd is in for The Real Deal in Sports today, taking a look at sexual harassment in the sports world. That's coming up right after commentary from Jim Hightower.
If you've ever been to one of the cities graced with a Trump hotel, casino, resort, etc., you know that the Donald splashes his name in giant gaudy letters across every structure he owns, preferably in gold. Now, he's taken ownership of a massive new structure, and he might not want his name on this one. It's Trump's towering redo of America's tax law, and it's truly golden. For the super rich, that is. Revealing in hard numbers whom his presidency really serves. Not just the 1%, but the 1/10 of 1%ers who are multimillionaires like, guess who? Him. First and foremost, the Trump tax plan slashes the payments that giant corporations make to support our nation. He claims that this will let corporate elites raise the wages of workers and create jobs, winking at the fact that, of course, the elites will pocket every dime of his tax giveaways. And shh, don't mention a little secret gotcha. A third of his corporate benefits go to foreign owners of American corporations. Meanwhile, Trump's luxurious new tax structure eliminates many benefits for middle-class families, such as tax deductions for medical expenses, college tuition, and interest paid on student loans. He wants modest-income families to pay more, so he can eliminate current taxes on his own uber-rich family, including killing the alternative income tax paid by the rich and the estate tax, which applies only to the immense fortunes of a handful of America's richest families. This is Jim Hightower saying, did I mention that the gilded tax structure proposed by this self-described business genius would hang an additional $1.5 trillion debt around our children's necks? No surprise, for Trump's grandiose luxury projects were often built with other people's money, advancing himself before he slipped away, leaving others to grapple with a bankruptcy.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Welcome to The Real Deal in Sports, a show about the cultural, social, political, spiritual, and economic impact of sports on the world at large. I'm Josh Chetwynd, and thanks for listening in. We also hope you'll contribute with questions and comments, as our phone lines, as always, are open. You can reach us at 303-442-4242. Our topic today is sexual assault and sexual harassment in sports. Over the past few months, we have seen a groundswell of attention towards this issue in a number of high-profile industries. A New York Times expose on longtime film mogul Harvey Weinstein led to a cascade of other reports about the deeply inappropriate actions of such Hollywood stars as actor Kevin Spacey and comedian Louis C.K. In the world of politics, numerous female members of Congress have begun to tell their stories of sexual harassment and assault, and Alabama's Republican U.S. Senate candidate Roy Moore is currently embroiled in allegations that he sexually assaulted girls as young as 14 years old. All of this has led to the hashtag MeToo movement, encouraging those victims of sexual assault and harassment to speak up in social media and elsewhere. None of this should be surprising for those with a knowledge of the sports world. There is a long and ignominious history of sexual assault in sports. Terrible stories that range from Jerry Sandusky's sexual abuse of children while serving as a football coach at Penn State University to star running back Ray Rice's attack on his wife stain the sporting landscape. Then there are instances of sexual harassment, most notably those of female sports journalists in locker rooms, that help complete a very difficult picture of the sports world. In this most recent wave of revelations of sexual abuse and harassment, there have been athletes who have used hashtag MeToo. Most notably, Olympic gymnast Michaela Maroney, who said she'd been sexually abused by USA Gymnastics team physician Larry Nassar, and longtime U.S. national team goalkeeper Hope Solo, who said that FIFA president Sepp Blatter, quote, grabbed, unquote, her buttocks in January 2013. All that said, in this current climate, one wonders whether there are more stories out there in the sports realm. Are athletes and, equally so, female front office members still afraid to speak out because of disparities of power in the sports world? Or has sports been ahead of the curve in identifying these awful cases, hence relatively fewer revelations now compared to other industries? I'll discuss those and other questions with my two guests. Catherine Starr is president of the organization Safe for Athletes, which was created to do, among other things, advocate for and help sports organizations adopt effective policies, procedures, and educational programs that are designed to prevent coach, volunteer, and peer misconduct, whether it be abuse, sexual, verbal, emotional, or physical, bullying, harassment, or other forms of inappropriate behaviors. She's also a two-time Olympian in 1984 and 1988 with Great Britain, and a well-decorated All-American swimmer at the NCAA level. And my other guest is Carmen Carter. She is the executive director of the Blue Bench, which is located here in Colorado and serves the community with the mission of eliminating sexual assault and diminishing the impact it has on individuals, their loved ones, and the community at large. She is also co-chair of the Denver Sexual Assault Interagency Council and has worked on many other task force in the similar area. Catherine, Carmen, thank you both so much for coming on The Real Deal in Sports.
Thank you for having
me. Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure.
Really appreciate it. Carmen, I'd like to start with you, and I want to sort of begin more broadly before we hone in on the sports world. Are these exposés of famous stars, producers, moguls, and politicians a sign that we're taking a step in the right direction in terms of addressing sexual assault and harassment?
Well, I hope so. I think it's exciting that the conversation is happening. People are sharing more and feeling like they can speak up, at least some people. We know that still there are a lot of folks out there who don't feel safe to yet share their story for a variety of reasons. But the secret to this is what happens next, because we've had these times where stories have come up and gotten attention for a short period of time, and then it goes away again. So it's only if we start taking this issue more seriously in everyone's day-to-day life, in conversations we have every day in the workplace, in corporations, on sports teams, that when someone shares they've been sexually assaulted, they're believed and the person is held accountable.
Catherine, are you heartened by the current focus on this issue in terms of looking forward towards addressing some of the systemic issues that lead to these very serious problems?
Yeah, so my experience, I've been specifically focused in sport for about the last 6 years, and what I have found is, well, it's mirrored in denial, doubt, and just normalized. Like, a lot of the behavior has just been normalized, and I think the same is true in Hollywood, right? But really the issue is, and I wrote an article on Fortune.com that it sort of shared my story and what the problem is, which is the silence of it all. But it wasn't just me that was silent, it was you too. So even when you witnessed or saw something, there was like a lack of a response. And I find that in part because no one knows who can do something about it. So when someone sexually harasses you or says something, you know, about your body or what have you, you know, and I was a swimmer, you know, you're certainly very exposed that way, but that's not, there's no data to support that anything like being exposed causes it or doesn't. But what I find is that the accountability to it isn't there. And so whom are you going to go talk to? And then over the last, what I've seen is a lot of policies have been adopted and codes of conduct have been adopted. But if you don't have a way to turn the wheel, then it stays in the system. And essentially that's what Safe for Athletes does. Is the structure of Safe for Athletes is what makes it unique when you implement our policies and the whole design of the program. Because otherwise, you're sort of left with this emptiness feeling of, what do I do? Like, you know, okay, I've told you, the person is still in my life. They're just maybe not doing it to me, but they're doing it to somebody else, or they've taken a break. So the consequences for the actions of the other person have been weak. And that's the part where I feel that we can, you know, put a system into your local club. Corporations have sort of more federal laws that can be held accountable to, but the local sports club does not. And so sexual abuse, criminal, like when it's criminal, it's clear, and the response part is very clear. But all the grooming elements and all the pieces that lead up to that is where I feel we can strengthen our voices and put together a structure that's meaningful and responsive.
Yeah, and I want to get into more detail about sort of the more prescriptive how we go about doing that in a moment, and specific to sports, as it is the focus of the show. But you did bring up the point about, you know, what is sort of a criminal, what is sort of very clear in terms of the law, and what isn't. I want to ask you, Carmen, because I know your organization has a fine website that speaks to the legal definitions of many of the issues that relate to this topic. Can you walk us through sort of what the definitions are, whether it's legal or just sort of common understanding for sexual assault, for rape and sexual harassment, so we have a full understanding for the purposes of this conversation?
Sure. Sexual assault really is defined as any forced or coerced sexual contact or behavior that happens without consent of the person that it happens to. So that is a crime, and that can be start with from verbal into forced sexual activity, anything, and anything in between really falls under sexual assault. Sexual harassment is really about making someone making unwanted sexual advances, often using obscene languages, often in a workplace or a social setting. And I think sports certainly is one of those locations where that happens as well. So they're different, although when someone gets away with sexual harassment for a long period of time, it often can, if there's someone's not held accountable at that end, can certainly be a setup for moving forward with a sexual assault.
Just a reminder, you're listening to The Real Deal in Sports on KGNU, Denver, Boulder, Fort Collins, and you can also listen streaming on KGNU.org. Our topic today is sexual harassment and sexual assault in sports. Do you believe these are problems that are particularly egregious in the sports world or not? And if so, why? We'd love to hear your opinions. You can call us at 303-442-4242. My guests are Catherine Starr, who is the president of the organization Safe for Athletes, which was created to do, among other things, advocate for and help sports organizations adopt effective policies, procedures, and educational programs that are designed to prevent coaches, volunteers, and peer misconduct, whether it be abuse, sexual, verbal, emotional, or physical, bullying, harassment, or other forms of inappropriate behaviors. She's also a former Olympic and highly successful collegiate athlete. And Carmen Carter is my second guest, who is the executive director of the Blue Bench, which is located here in Denver and serves the community with the mission of eliminating sexual assault and diminishing the impact it has on individuals, their loved ones, and the community at large. Again, you can join the conversation at 303-442-4242. Catherine, I want to now really turn our attention to the main focus of this discussion, which is sexual assault and harassment in the sports world. And I have to be honest with you, knowing the history of this topic in sports, it's a relatively ugly history. I must say I've been surprised that we haven't seen more stories like Harvey Weinstein's or Louis C.K.'s that have come from the sports community. I mentioned a couple at the top of the show. And I don't want to diminish those because they are very serious. But once this sort of cascade of stories began, were you expecting to see more revelations among athletes? Or do you think that there are certain systemic issues that are preventing that still from occurring at the same level that we're seeing in some of these other high-profile industries?
Well, I would say that there's been so many high-profile people that I know that
that at Safer Athletes, we've had an influx of people that have come forward and have asked for direction on how to respond to things. So I would just say that the media hasn't picked it up in a way that in the same manner. But, you know, the other thing is what I think the struggle is the guilt and shame when the athlete knows that they didn't come forward. And, you know, and sort of that struggle to have witnessed and sort of pursued your own athletic career and either didn't accept or acknowledge that that was happening in your sports environment. And so you have like that struggle as well. So they're not necessarily serial, like in the case of my coach who sexual abused like over 30 women, they were like, it was one at a time on separate clubs. Or the person had left. So there was always, and it was like, I was the only girl amongst, I swam with five guys. So there was just one, I was the only person. And for 2 years isolated to him. And he was also the head Olympic coach. So while I removed myself at the club level, I never was able to remove myself from him. And so, but the patterns, and the power structure aren't quite the same as you would have in Hollywood. So you have somebody who's a producer who is really the most outside of the studios, has the largest production company, and is, you know, the largest library of films and getting films done. So your goals in that direction make him, like, it's easy for him to speak out, but who are all the other people who have the power to affect you in your career? And I think if you look at in the sports world, when you're in it, it's like you're really stuck with this moral dilemma of selfishness, of pursuing your own. And you shouldn't have to have this moral dilemma. But having, and that's where I think the silence comes within the athlete is, well, you know, I have my world going on. And then you're also, the difference between sort of Hollywood and sport on another big level is the age. So you're asking a young person to respond with this level of emotional intelligence that you wouldn't develop until later in life. And I find what you're asking and what you're putting on a young athlete who's, you know, you're 13, 14, 15, 16 years old, and you're one of the best in the world. Like, you're one of the best in the world or the best in the world at what you do. And you're treated like you're in the mid-career, if you know, like in a corporation, like you're 40 or 50 when you, you know, peaked. But you don't have the intellectual knowledge. You don't have the emotional ability. You're a machine, and you're not treated in this human way. So I think that's a lot of how it stays in the system, and there's an inability to, like, because I think it is far more rampant. I know it's far more rampant. And then there's also this element of a lot of athletes marry their coaches. And so now you have to look at, like, when is it harmful and when is it okay? So there's sort of this myriad of inconsistencies that creates, one loses their ability to understand what's the truth. It's very much a complex issue.
Absolutely.
In that regard.
Absolutely. Carmen, you've obviously dealt with individuals who have been affected by sexual abuse, sexual assault, and sexual harassment in many different areas. Do you see other areas that are unique about sports in terms of the disparity of power that Catherine's talking about?
Well, I think that is the whole, we can't ever forget sexual assault is about power and control. And so anytime there are differences in who has power and who doesn't have power, it makes the situation very ripe if someone chooses to use it in a negative way. So I think, you know, I think sports clearly, I mean, I think listening to some of the gymnasts talk in the last week, you know, each of them, and I think this is probably true for a lot of folks youth in sports, they're hearing you're special, you're the one I really care about or love, or all of these grooming messages that are shared. So I think it doesn't, there isn't always this thought like, oh, who else is this happening to, at least in that teenage, in those teen years. So I totally agree with Catherine that it's too much to expect teens to step into that. And in my opinion, it's about other adults being aware and paying attention to the relationships that they're seeing every day, and probably asking some more questions.
Catherine, is there a difference between individual sports and the isolating manner of that when it comes to this issue compared to team sports? I know you've dealt with athletes across the board, or are the issues that individual athletes in events like swimming deal with, or gymnastics, very similar to potentially what athletes deal with in the team environment?
So what I have found is that every sport has its own strain of sexual abuse, and it just manifests slightly differently. So it doesn't matter if it's a team sport or a individual sport, or a majority male sport or majority female sport. It doesn't matter. They're sexual. I mean, I've dealt with, in the football world, in American football or soccer, very team structured sports. I probably get more of those two sports around sexual abuse, and sexual hazing is a big thing as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, about the issue of hazing, which is such a considering an esprit de corps piece of sports. How do we work that out of sports? Is that something that you're finding there's a great effort to get hazing out of it? Because it seems like that is very much a gateway to a number of issues. And there have been many examples that through what is considered hazy, there has been sexual abuse or sexual harassment.
So I have found specifically on sexual hazing, very strong amongst team sports, and it's but how it stays in the system, which is really the question here, is it really stems down to leadership, and there's been like a loss of control. And so what happens is in the team sports is that the power is built on the success and the outcome of that team and the legacy and the history. And so the person that can respond, if it's in sort of the school system, the principal, what have you, their power may not be as strong as the power of the team. And so that essentially what keeps it in the system, because they can't enforce. They're like the success has become greater. And that's the piece that we need to address and change. Otherwise, the people that participate in that environment are at risk for harm.
You're listening to The Real Deal in Sports on KGNU, Denver, Boulder, Fort Collins. Our topic today is sexual harassment and sexual assault in the sports world. Do you believe that there are systemic issues in the sports world that make it particularly ripe for sexual harassment and sexual assault? If so, or if not, we'd love to hear your opinions and thoughts on this topic. You can call us, as always, at 303-442-4242. Carmen, I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about this issue of disparity of power, because one dynamic in sports is just the general harassment element, that there has been a long time sort of coaching strategy, not all coaches, but some coaches, that believe a legitimate way to motivate athletes is some level of harassment, which seems to open it up, that sort of demeaning aspect, to sort of then crossing over to potentially sexual harassment. Is that something that you see as a legitimate issue, or something unique to sports? Or do you see a similar type of issue throughout, that whenever there's an opening for harassment, that it can then carry over to specifically sexual harassment?
You know, I think it's true that in sports and the situation with how people choose to coach, how, you know, in my mind, sexual harassment and sexual assault is all about respect. And so coaching can be done, and there are so many very successful coaches who really choose to respect their players and yet still work to get the best out of them. But unfortunately, there are people who choose to coach by degrading, by putting a lot of negative pressure on people, often encouraging other players to give another person a really difficult time. And, you know, in my mind, that is a setup for it. Also says to the other players on the team who are watching that behavior, oh, I can behave this way too, because the coach does. So the coach serves as a role model, and they can either serve as a positive role model or a very negative role model.
Catherine, what's your experience been on this issue in terms of harassment in general, you know, the coaches pushing, does that serve as a gateway to the sexual harassment, or are they sort of bifurcated in a way?
No, there's no data to support that it's a gateway at all. Okay. So what happens is, and how, so at each sport, the general peak age of the sport, gymnastics has a young peak age for when you become sort of committed into the sport, and when you become where you would call yourself that kind of athlete. So I mean, it's probably about 14, where you're committed and pursuing sport. Cycling's probably about 18, 19, 20. You can't compete in the Olympics, so you're 18 in cycling. So what happens is that where the vulnerability for sexual abuse is when you went at your peak age into the sport. So the reason that we don't hear about some of the older sports and some of the other sports, and we hear a lot about swimming, we hear a lot about gymnastics, is because their peak age is younger, and they're more popular, right? So they're considered one of the most viewed sports. So we're in cycling, the exact same dynamic happens between a coach and an athlete. And an abusive coach is unlikely to be a sexual harasser, mostly because, and they just don't cross over like that. And most sexual abusing coaches are actually very charming and very nice, and they've invested in you, and they see you as this unique individual, and you're going to be a star, and you get all the attention on the team. And you yourself get the intimacy between that relationship gets convoluted, because what you've also done when you've peaked into your sport, you're also at this vulnerable age where you're leaving the family. So this dynamic also is in this parental figure. So you've transferred what you've been getting at home into what you're getting in your sport. So, but as far as an aggressive or abusive or strict coach, they certainly can create a toxic environment and can be very harmful. Any athlete at a very elite level, there's a certain level of expectation of it's not always nice. And I mean, there's times where accountability to you participating at your highest level, but it doesn't need to be there's a yelling and all that stuff is very ineffective. It's like I coach, and when I do coach, I'm a tough coach, but I do it with a smile, so they like want to work hard. But right. If you do my workouts, they would be physically, you would have to rise up to accomplish
be
them.
Demanding.
Yeah.
Well, we have our first caller I'd like to get to him. It's Eric in Boulder. Eric, you're on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.
Yeah, how's it going? I just have a question for the panel. I was wondering if specialization in youth sports is increasing the probability of sexual offense or abuse or things like that. And, I've gone through a couple safe sports seminars, And it sort of seems like that can be the case, but I wanted to get your guys' opinion on that.
Yeah, Catherine, do you want to answer that question?
Yeah, I'll take that. So I think that the general trend right now, certainly at a younger age, is not to create the dependence on one coach, and so which is essentially where the vulnerability of the problem is. So if you can, I think it's less about specialization as it is on dependence on one person fulfilling all your needs as an athlete.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Eric. Really appreciate the call. And anyone else out there who would like to chime in with any of your thoughts or questions or comments for our panel, our telephone number is 303-442-4242. A reminder, my guests are Catherine Starr, who is the president of the organization Safe for Athletes, which was created to do, among other things, advocate for and help sports organizations adopt effective policies, procedures, and educational programs that are designed to prevent coaches, volunteers, and peers from misconduct, whether it be abuse, sexual, verbal, or emotional, or physical, bullying, harassments, or other forms of inappropriate behavior. She's also a former Olympic and highly successful collegiate athlete. And my other guest is Carmen Carter, who's the executive director of the Blue Bench, which is located here in Colorado, and serves the community with the mission of eliminating sexual assault and diminishing the impact it has on individuals, their loved ones, and the community at large. Carmen, we talked a lot about athletes and that element of sports because it's a huge element of it. Sports is also a large business, a large industry, a very high-profile industry. There has been one example in sort of the broader sports community. Jamie Horowitz, who is the president of Fox Sports, was fired from his position due to allegations of sexual harassment. But we haven't seen within major sports organizations' front offices as many examples as we've seen in politics in Hollywood so far. Is there any explanation for that you can think of? Is there, there are fewer women typically, and particularly the major North American sports, in those offices, and perhaps they don't feel as comfortable as maybe Hollywood, or perhaps people are learning something and it's a little better on that front?
You know, I think the reality is, this has been short-lived. It just really began in October that even folks in Hollywood were feeling like they could speak out. So I think it's probably a little early to say whether that means something, that we're not hearing as much from folks in the, national sports arenas. But, I think people in jobs, whether it's a minimum wage job or it's a career or it's on a sports team, a lot of people feel the fear of losing the ability to survive. And so the fear of that is so real in coming out and sharing your story. I think it's great for people who are finding their voice and feeling like they can share what's happened to them, but for every person who comes out, there are so many more people who do not yet feel that comfort level. So it would be tough for me to say that it's not happening in those places. Unfortunately, I think sexual assault and sexual harassment happens everywhere. I think what can make the difference is what environment does a company or business take on.
Absolutely. Well, we have another caller. It's Barbara in Golden. Barbara, you're on KGNU in Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.
Yeah, I just wondered, you guys seem to be talking in pretty gender-neutral terms, people who are affected and coaches, and it seems to me that I would suspect it was mostly male perpetrators and female victims, but I'd like you to address that.
Yeah, it's actually broader than that. And Catherine, please, yeah, I know you probably have thoughts on this.
Yeah, well, no, I think that there's research on this that I could share about that. So first of all, the coaching from a coach-athlete dynamic is that it's generally been 80 to 90% male profession. But how it breaks up is that it's 90% male onto female
perpetration. We have the data up on Safer Athletes, which you can see. But then the other 10% is broke up evenly between male on male, female on female, and female on male. But it's mostly because and the data since that was done would have skewed a little bit, but it's based on the makeup of the profession. It's pretty consistent.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, though. I wonder to how much media skews that to a certain extent. I know a couple of the larger stories have been male-on-male stories, particularly in Canada. There was a sort of this huge scandal over a hockey coach who had serially molested a number of young boys. And then the Jerry Sandusky case are two of the larger ones. But it's interesting to hear that despite those getting outsized attention in the media, that they represent that small a percentage of the overall amount. Do you think that's the media sort of skewing that a little bit, Catherine?
Yeah, I think that the media is looking for, based on my experience and when they call and ask for stuff from me, they're looking for what's the story, what's, you know, unique about this, you know, situation. But essentially, so what I can tell you is, and this is sort of from the data that when Safer Athletes did a survey around this, and it stemmed from me. So most of the, about 200 people responded, just to kind of give you a rate. But of that, 160 of those were elite athletes and competed either pro or collegiate Division I or Olympian, right? So, and of that data, it was a mix between male and female on there, but it showed that 25.2%, which is 1 in 4, which is a combination of both, said that they had some sort of sexual abuse during the course of their career. But if you can look at the data that Safer Athletes did, what was consistent was that we asked if it was a single instance or multiple times over a single year, or if it was multiple times over multiple years. And over all of the abuses we asked about, whether it was emotional, verbal, or physical, or sexual, each one of those identified that it was multiple times over multiple years. These are not single instances. This is during the course of the dynamic and of the relationship, which shows that there's no structure and there's no wheel to get it out. No one's going to hear you. It's so deep into the system. It's so deeply in drained. But the difference between a male and a female, it's really based on how the coach, like in a, you know, it was mostly male when Sheldon Kennedy came forward and about his. I mean, hockey was more predominantly a male sport, and it happened. So, you know, you would see that in that kind of breakdown of the dynamics.
Catherine, you mentioned that those statistics related primarily to elite athletes. Is that reflective, though, of what's going on with youth athletes who are not elite necessarily? I mean, do you see a greater number of these types of or forms of sexual abuse amongst elite athletes, or is it just the statistics are better there and we've looked into it more?
You could say it's a combination of both, but generally what happens is the more entrenched you are in your sport, the more at risk you are to being sexually abused.
Okay. We have another caller. Sorry. I was going to bring on another caller. I always want to make sure that they get their time. Sally in Boulder, yeah. You're on KGNU.
Hi. Yeah, I wonder, are you all familiar that there is a very timely play going on right now in Boulder, the rape of the Sabine women by local theater company? This is its last weekend. It's extremely relevant to this conversation and our time. It's about sexual assault in high school. It's really clever, brilliant, and it's right here at the Derry Center of the Arts. So I highly recommend looking into this for our audience. So that's local theater company here in Boulder. And I do have a question. You were speaking earlier about kind of the grooming traits of a perpetrator and generally kind of a coach, excuse me. And I wonder if the groomer might start out innocently, but then through the long-term relationship of coaching and closeness, if the slippage to inappropriate sexual boundaries occurs, and if this has ever been studied.
Carmen, do you have anything on that? Or I'll throw it to Carmen first.
I think, I think that's a lovely way to look at it, but I think in reality, people who set out to sexually assault a person do it in a very methodical way of grooming someone slowly by gaining trust of often their parents as well as the youth. And then, you know, build that relationship up with the sole purpose of sexually assaulting them. So I'm afraid that's the reality of what occurs and the research has shown.
Okay.
Catherine, yeah. do you have thoughts on that as well, too, for Sally?
I can certainly speak from my experience. I concur with Carmen on this. And so as far as research is done on grooming, based on the numerous athletes that I've spoken to, not one has ever said there was a moment that it flipped. And I wrote about it. If you go to fortune.com and type in Catherine Starr on Google, whatever, you can see specifically how I wrote about this, which I think would address your question in more depth. But it mostly has to do with silence in the system, as opposed to it changing, that there's a moment where it changes. And it has to do with the dependence and the depth of the relationship between the coach and the athlete.
Sally, yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much for your call. Do you want to give a pitch one more time for local theater?
Yeah. So it's Local Theater Company, just co.org. The name of the play is The Rape of the Sabine Women by Grace B. Mathias. And it's just a beautiful production. This is its last weekend, so Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Dairy Center for the Arts.
Wonderful.
Thanks so much to you all at KGNU. Bye.
Thank you. Have a good day. Reminder, you're listening to The Real Deal in Sports on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, Fort Collins. Our topic today is sexual harassment and sexual assault in the sports world. We'd love to hear your thoughts and comments on this topic. You can call us, as always, at 303-442-4242. It's almost 9:16 a.m., so we have about 14 minutes left in the show. And with the balance of the show, I'd love to talk to both of my guests, Catherine Starr and Carmen Carter, about prescriptive things, what we can do to make this situation better, how we can work systemically on this. And Catherine, I know you've given a lot of time and thought to this very issue in the sports realm. And it probably would take more than 4 or 5 shows for you to properly articulate all the things that you think could be done. But can you give an overview of some of the real important elements that we should be looking at to try and solve this problem, particularly in the sports area?
Well, first you can, so we go to safe4athletes.org. We have, for any club, every local club should have policies and procedures in place. But if you look at the structure of Safe for Athletes, we require there be an athlete welfare advocate where it's a non-biased person for the athlete to go and have a conversation with, which makes it unique. And, you know, you can follow the flow of the conversation. We also show you how to mediate and deal with it right there at the local club to get to the solution. So all of our policies can be implemented for free. Like, take our policies, become a Safe for Athletes club. So, you know, and what I find is we have several clubs and several sports that have implemented Safe for Athletes across the country. And we have successfully addressed many an issue. And accountability has come. And, you know, and I've seen a shift. And what I've also, and I know sort of what you can do to
to put a plug out to several young, I've watched these young athletes who knew that they had a voice. And the fact is that they are stronger girls. They're much stronger. And their parents call me and they say, you're not going to believe what, you know, my kid said when she was helping another young person her age, like another teenager, get out of an abusive environment, abusive sport environment. You know, so I'm getting credit for parenting without children. So, but to see the strength of these young girls, and that's why it's so important to have these policies in place. They're educated, they have prevention, but as soon as you put them in, they know and that they have a voice, that they can say something. Without them, it's just sort of like you just talk about it and you try to figure it out amongst yourselves, and there's nothing you can do. And there's very little you can do. It has to get to that criminal level. But there's so much stuff between where it becomes a crime and when it's harmful for the person's spirit. Where, you know, and that's a place we can address all this other stuff, which often sits in this gray area. So I highly recommend that. Like, that's a place to start. It's in place. You don't need to recreate the wheel. And everybody's held accountable in the environment.
Carmen, how important is it to speak out? I mean, it seems to be this is one of the pushes right now, at least through social media and the hashtag MeToo movement. And is it fair to ask everyone to speak out? Is everyone comfortable? But is it difference making? The more people that speak out, there's a cascade effect there.
I think for people who are ready to speak out, it's a really powerful step. But I think it's unfair to ask everyone to speak out because they were victimized. They shouldn't be forced. They shouldn't be the one forced to have to share their story. And for some people, it's not healthy. It's not the right thing for them to do. It may become the right thing for them to do at another point, but we are very supportive of people making that choice for themselves. I think it's important when I think about how we change this, just to add to what Catherine was saying is, you know, as parents have to create an environment that says to their kids, you can tell me anything. I will believe you. Because that often is what keeps anyone from sharing they've been assaulted, as both youth and as adults, that they won't be believed. And if parents create an environment that say, whatever it is, talk to me, then when something does happen, things can be dealt with so much more quickly. But again, you know, the expectation has to fall on the adults around youth to be looking for things, asking questions, and being supportive.
Catherine, I think one other big issue that has often come up in this area is victim shaming, and that has been a huge impediment in terms of moving forward. Is that particularly true in sports? Is it something that is one of the huge hurdles? Is the fear that you're going to be blamed if you come out and speak about your experiences?
I'm not necessarily sure that there's a pattern of victim shaming per se. What I would say is, depending on the target of the coach, and some of the, you know, sometimes the target of the coach is the person that's a top athlete, but oftentimes they can be the, like, sort of second-tier athlete. So what happens is that, like, if you speak up, you're going to ruin the career of the other people, the other athletes in that program. So it's not so much the victim shaming because they don't even feel like they're important and even have a voice. And so it's like needing help with that dynamic. And I understand the not moving too fast and letting it be on the side of the victim. I just want to say that. But in the environment, with the Safer Athletes program, you have an adult to talk to, so you have a way to get it out of the system. And it's where they're not taking the responsibility out of the whole thing, like that they have to deal with victim shaming, deal with ruining the coach's life, deal with, you know, ruining other top athletes and their dependence on this person. But what is true in your sport is it becomes very incestuous. And so you have this concern on turning on your own people. And so, and that's the part where you could say that there's victim shaming involved. But the other part of it is, and the complexity of that situation is that you're also turning on your own passion and what drives you and what fulfills you. So you have that dilemma that's going on inside of you. Like if I speak up, the very thing that brings me joy and love is the very thing that is hurting and harming me. So it becomes less of the people on the outside as it also becomes what drives you as a person.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the factors that makes sports, I wouldn't say unique, but certainly is a characteristic of it, is the tribal nature of it, that you're on the team and you're a part of a group and that things should stay within the family. That's a phraseology you often hear, like, you know, we'll handle our own problems here. Is that a culture that needs to be changed as it relates to this? I mean, because I know that that is certainly a mantra that comes up in sports a lot.
Oh, absolutely. It absolutely is. And that's why you need assistance and help from an outside entity so you don't feel like it's you. Like in the clubs that run Safe for Athletes, it's a parent, a volunteer parent that's stepping into that role as the athlete welfare advocate. So you're not, and they usually have a kid on the team somewhere, not necessarily the elite side of things. But you can go and have that conversation so you don't have to be concerned about it coming out of the family and harming this family and harming this ecosystem. And you're not enough or, you know, you're not good enough, or you're not one of the best people on the team, or, you know, whatever block is blocking you has the opportunity to be removed so those things aren't in the way of all of that.
Yeah. Carmen, are we getting better as a culture on this issue, or is it just status quo that we keep on, it's like Sisyphus, we keep on pushing the boulder up the hill and it rolling back down?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'd like to think we're getting better. I think we have to keep pushing. I think when there are conversations happening that are happening right now, we have to keep pushing this forward and all come together around this, around how do we do this differently? And we can, as a culture, do it differently. But it really does mean each of us looking at what we do, what we say, what we let other people do and say around us, and get away with. For this to change, it has to change on a cultural perspective, and that's the steps we haven't yet seen. But I'm more hopeful for than I have been recently.
Catherine, can we look to any other cultures for any sort of guidance here? I mean, is there anything uniquely American about the way we handle this? Or is this something that's sort of cross-cultural in terms of the problem? Or is there some other country, other culture out there that we can look to give us some inspiration?
Well, I think our first problem is our legal system, or the fear of being sued and the fear of whatever out of that legal system comes, which I think creates a huge problem being able to speak up. And as far as another country goes, you could say that Europe has put more resources, both the European Union and the British and the UK, and they've been addressing this problem for a lot longer than the U.S. has. And so there's only two countries in the world where the government doesn't run sport as well. So the U.S. and Britain are the only two countries that have their own, you know, commercialization of sport, and it's not funded and supported through their government. So all the other countries are left to, like, a sport minister and how they handle things, which they are not advanced at. Britain's leading the way with a long way to go, and I think what we've seen is all these issues come out of, like, FIFA and their soccer program, and which has also been a male-on-male coach issue amongst the ranks. I don't know if you followed that. And people could say, they have more problems. They don't have more problems. They have a system that has brought out the problems. And so they've seen it. But it's taken 15 years in the making to get to a place for people to finally speak up about a very powerful sport and structure and everything else. So, and the infrastructure is starting in the U.S., but it's not there yet. There's a lot more to go and a lot more to build and a lot more to come from. And so, and I think once those systems are in place in all of the various industries, but sports falls outside of the legal structure. And so, and that's what people don't understand. That in itself needs to change. There's already 44 million young people that participate in athletics on a daily basis. So until we have, and some states have addressed things and some haven't, but I could go a long time for that. So I would say that we're like in a position of where things have potential to move forward. But I expect to hear more and more. I do not expect this to die in a way. I think that more will be revealed because we're creating a way for it to be revealed.
Well, that's a nice optimistic note to end our hour on. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I really want to thank both my guests for being on the show. Catherine Starr, who is the president of the organization Safe for Athletes, which was created to do, among other things, advocate for and help sports organizations adopt effective policies, procedures, and educational programs that are designed to prevent coach, volunteer, and peer misconduct, whether it be abuse, sexual, verbal, emotional, or physical bullying, harassment, or other forms of inappropriate behavior. Catherine, just very quickly, we've linked to it on our website, kgnu.org, but can you just tell our listeners what your website is?
It's safe4athletes.org.
Perfect. And my other guest has been Carmen Carter, who is the executive director of the Blue Bench, which is located here in Denver and serves the community with the mission of eliminating sexual assault and diminishing the impact it has on individuals, their loved ones, and the community at large. And a plug as well, Carmen, please, for your great organization.
Yes, I just want to encourage people to ask for our prevention program we do in schools where your children go, because we think it's important to educate all youth about being positive, interactive bystanders. And you can find information at www.thebluebench.org.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been your host, Josh Chewin. And next up, please stay tuned for Uncle Jeff and the Morning Sound Alternative.
Drifting too far from the shore. Jesus today, let him show you the way. You're drifting too far from the shore. Out on the perilous deep, where danger silently creeps and storms. Peaceful shore, come to Jesus today. Let him show you the way. You're drifting too far from the shore. Why me? Shore, from the shore, you're
she's for sure. Come to Jesus today, let him show you the way. You're drifting too far from the shore.
Do, 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 tell me how much you missed me. When the last time I saw you, you wouldn't even kiss me. That rich guy you've been seeing must have put you down. So welcome back, baby, to the post side of town. To him, you were nothing but a little plaything.
Was a plaything.
Not much more than an overnight fling. This boy had ever found. And girl, it's hard to find nice things on the poor side of town. I can't blame you for trying. I'm trying to make it too. I got one little hang up, baby. I just can't make it without you. Stay now.
Will I stay now? Do I?
Will you stand by me?